listen to my daddy and my Uncle Jay. Not in a creepy way.
That's my everlasting memory of that film. Not the film, but my ass getting blistered from the seat.
Awkward. I did not see that kind.
Oh, come on.
That's okay. I like this podcast.
So welcome. I'm Eric.
I'm Brother Jay.
And do we have any housekeeping before we launch into this week's thrilling episode of Not in a Creepy Way?
No, not that I recall.
Any thoughts on Tombstone?
I have a very different recollection of the film. I think you and Drew and I all went and saw the movie together. Because I seem to recall driving home and having some horrible reaction to candy and like hyperventilating.
Well, which is always spells a good time at the theater.
But I'm a big Western fan and the cowboys and it's never been an appealing plot line or story to me. So I didn't really, I'm not a big Tombstone fan. So.
Well, I don't think I go out of my way to watch a Western if I have a choice, but, well, you know, like the way I would watch a horror movie given the choice. You know, I'd much rather watch a horror or science fiction or a drama or a thriller than to watch just something labeled a Western. But this just had, it was just so much over the top and fun action and snappy dialogue. It made me smile to watch it again. It made me smile to talk to Drew about it again. It made me smile to listen to us talking and edit it again.
Well, and it certainly had a lot of actors in it that I like very much. So, from that standpoint, I'm like, yeah, and like I said, I've seen it. I don't hate it, but it's, not probably, high on my list of things I'm going to watch or rewatch.
Yeah, well, it's on my list of judgment. Trademark. Bing!
There's going to cue the reverb.
I'm telling you, editing makes me smile, and I don't know why.
Yeah. Although, there are observations like, I think I laugh at your jokes. I think Brother Drew does not tend to laugh at your jokes.
Well, that's okay, as it turns out. It's funny, Drew hates to listen to himself. So he's slightly cringy, I think.
The way it's been edited, I actually don't have a problem listening to myself because the way on the podcast I don't sound as bad as I normally sound like when I recorded myself on my telephone when I hear myself. So.
Well, and we can adjust the levels a little bit. It won't sound quite as
tight. No, I'm fine. No, don't change a thing. I sound subtly. I'm good.
Yeah, no.
If you make me sound skinnier and make it happen in real life, I'm good with that too.
Oh, yeah, I hope I sound taller. That's all I'm saying. Okay, so are we ready for Hunt for Red October?
Yeah.
Now, is this on your
list? The list of judgment.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, we talked about how we both liked it, and you are a fan of the Jack Ryan movies?
I am. I preface this. I haven't read any of the Clancy novels, and I'm not a fan of the Tom Clancy game, like Splinter Cell, and all. I'm not big on the first-person shooter games because I don't like killing people. Zombies are one thing, and I guess kill Wolfenstein when I'm killing Nazis, that's another thing. But it's hard for me to be in a game where I'm killing people. So I do have the Jack Ryan series. It's a 4-DVD box set. I do own that. So.
Okay, so you're actually more knowledgeable on this. For me, when I grew up, I think Tom Clancy was just... I just missed that window. I mean, when I was reading those types of books, I think I was reading more of the Clive Cussler series or the, like, Robert Ludlum, that kind of thing. And I think I had sort of moved on to other things by the time Tom Clancy became popular. And it is a pretty specific genre.
And for me, The Hunt for Red October, I have a different take on the movie because I never saw it in the theater. And the reason I never saw it in the theater is because in 1989, which is the year before this movie came out, I was hired to work at a movie theater. And The Hunt for Red October was a sleeper hit that was so big that it actually took staff away from our theater to the sister theater in Eagle River because of how big it was. And the Anchorage screen of my chain didn't have the fortune to pick the film. It was a sleeper film, and nobody thought it was going to be all that big a hit. And it turned out being one of the biggest hits of the summer.
So it ended up being your theater chain in a neighboring community, but the rival in our community. Or was
No, it didn't. Yeah, it didn't play at the University Center. It was playing in the Valley River Center in Eagle River.
Yeah, and so it was obviously playing someplace. It was playing at, like, the Fireweed or something.
Yeah, somebody else got it in the city, and that's because we didn't bid on it. So we didn't get screens for it. But the Valley River did, and of course, Valley River, there were not a lot of movie theaters out in the Valley, and so it was a huge hit, and of course they were just selling out. So I never saw this movie in the theater, but my first exposure was watching it on DVD, but it's a great fun movie. I will say that upon rewatching it the other day, I noticed something that I hadn't really noticed before.
Okay.
And that the first shot of the movie, the opening where Alec Baldwin is talking with the nanny, who is Gates McFadden from People Will Recognize Her as Dr. Beverly Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay.
Alec Baldwin looks incredibly, incredibly, incredibly young.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, so schoolboyishly young that he actually looks like one of his other brothers from now, is how just like Billy Baldwin, he looks, of course they're all related, so it's not surprising, but he looks so surprisingly young, and then when you move forward about 10 minutes in the movie, he looks like he's aged like 4 or 5 years. And so it makes me wonder if the very, very beginning of this film wasn't the screen test that they'd used, and then they kind of just spliced that in as some additional background to the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because if you go back and watch, it's still Alec Baldwin, but it looks like the time, it just looks very, very different. It's a very different Alec Baldwin.
Hmm.
And maybe I'm just, you know, maybe I'm paying too much attention on this makeup and who knows. But it was something I noticed that I was interesting. So I'm going to go back and rewatch it and kind of take some notes.
Yeah, we'll have to do an update on that part of it because, yeah, I want to do a little bit of digging to find out.
Yeah, me too. So that was the one thing I noticed. But you know, it's a little bit dated. You know, it's a Cold War film, so, you know, the Cold War doesn't necessarily exist today, although, you know, we don't know.
Yeah. Well, now we're back at it.
Ukraine, you know, the Cold War being gone changes things a little bit, but it's a little bit dated. You know, again, we go back to where technology has changed. And so, you know, there was a couple points in the movie where it's like, well, you know, that wouldn't happen anymore. You know, it's still, I thought it's still a good movie. It's still entertaining and you know, it still has tension and, you know, I walked away after watching it and I didn't, you know, I still was like, you know, I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. It didn't have that thrilling, you know, aspect of a Tombstone for nostalgia. And it wasn't like a big thinky movie. It was just more a popcorn action movie. But it did its job quite well. I mean, I actually was pretty pleased with watching it, even realizing that this is old generation CGI. So the torpedo scenes were a little bit hinky.
Yeah.
But the fact that they had to use a lot of practical effects and just, they used real submarines in a lot of the open water part of it. And that was pretty
cool. And the scenes where they're actually on the sub and the sub is moving back and forth, they built all of that on a rigging with hydraulics. So when you see things move up and down and back and forth, the actors are physically on the stage just moving up and down and back and forth. So they didn't do any of that camera BS where they're just, you know, panning the camera down to make it look like things are going down and things like that. So there was an element of realism to the actors themselves being, you know, kind of in motion.
Not only in motion, but they're also in a claustrophobic submarine environment. Because in the soundstage where they built all that stuff, all the sets on the hydraulics, they were all crammed, you know, well above the floor. I mean, they were sort of up in the air on the stage, all crammed together. So they were experiencing the claustrophobia of being on a submarine. So
absolutely, a claustrophobic movie. If you suffer from claustrophobia, you're going to feel it.
But I thought the pacing was pretty good. I guess you want to go through the plot then.
Sure.
Okay. Well, actually, I guess it's a little history is worthwhile. I didn't read the novels either, so I'm at that disadvantage. But Tom Clancy, he wrote the novel, and he couldn't find a publisher for it. So actually, like, the Navy Press did the first printing of the book, and Ronald Reagan read it and said, well, I think this is a pretty great story. And that's where, like, I think Putnam picked it up, and it became a bestseller. So, you know, and all that information that Clancy has is from his, I guess, experience in the military. It was kind of a sleeper book as well as a sleeper film. And at first, all the studios passed on it because they didn't think that it was action-oriented enough. But I think Paramount, took a chance, and what we have is the movie that came out in 1990, which is, coincidentally, the year after the Cold War ended. So they're a little bit worried about that, too. They thought, oh, is this going to play? But turns out the themes are universal, and all they had to do was they added a little tag in the front of it saying that this happened in 1984. And obviously the Cold War was still going on then, so that worked out fine. So the movie opens, you're reminding me the movie opens with a little domestic scene of Jack Ryan. But the plot gets launched, if you pardon the pun, when Soviet submarine captain Marco Ramius, played by Sean Connery, is commanding the Red October, which is a new heavy-class nuclear sub featuring a Caterpillar drive, rendering it undetectable to passive sonar. Ramius leaves port on orders to conduct exercises with the submarine VK...
I'm sorry.
The names are killing me, and I don't know why. VK... Yeah, anyway, the submarine Konovalov is who he's supposed to go do exercises with, and that is actually helmed by his former student, Captain...
Protégé.
Yes, Captain Tupolev, which is Stellan Skarsgård. So...
Tupolev, who is anecdotally, you know, apparently of great esteem because he comes from a rich family, which, you know, may be alluding to the Tupolev heir, the heir baron. So,
well, and in the movie, do you remember why Ramius's wife died? I mean, it was in the plot that she died. It was apparent that's why he was defecting, or that's one of the reasons he was defecting. But did they mention at all why how she died?
I don't think it was ever mentioned.
Because in the book, I find out that one of the reasons why he's defecting is his wife had to have surgery and it was performed by a doctor who was drunk, but that doctor had high connections in the Politburo, so nothing was ever done about it. So that's what disillusioned him. And that's why he's now, he has put out to sea to do this exercise. And the first thing, well, after you meet a little bit of his crew, which is his second in command, he's the captain second rank, is Sam Neill. So he's basically the second in charge. And then you've got, in a strange casting choice, Tim Curry as Senior Lieutenant Dr. Yevgeny Petrov, Chief Medical Officer.
And I really love the fact that Tim Curry was in it, but I thought the same thing. I'm like, what kind of weird twist of casting? Because it's not really a big role, and he's not utilized much, and he does end up making goofy faces, which Tim Curry's good at, but.
Well, that's kind of a problem because it's not a big role, but it's kind of an important role. And he doesn't have the gravity.
The gravitas.
Yeah, the gravitas. Yeah. He just doesn't have the authority of a Russian naval officer.
Right.
He comes off kind
of... You're right. He had a very timid demeanor, which is, you wouldn't have put somebody on I mean, I can't imagine any of the Russian Navy, let alone the American Navy. I can't imagine any of them being very timid.
To me, it was almost like you might as well have cast Yakov Smirnov.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been just, and I really like Tim Curry, don't get me wrong. I just don't think he was the best actor for this role.
I agree with you.
Anyway, so apparently the captain of a nuclear submarine is still basically told what to do
Did you say nuclear?
I probably did say nuclear.
Let
me start over.
Your younger brother and I will beat you.
I know.
Nuclear submarine, sorry?
Yeah. Anyway, nuclear submarine. lost my place and my mind. Apparently, the actual orders, there's some sort of ceremony that takes place, and the actual orders are read by the political officer on board. Did you catch the name of the political officer?
No, should I have?
Yeah, his name is Putin. Ivan Putin is political officer on the submarine. Which, you know, in 2014 is hilarious.
And he was an unlikable, I mean, and maybe he was written on purpose, but what an unlikable man anyway.
Exactly, which is perfect. You know, sort of the cold, political, you know, Russian character.
Yeah, the lackey, basically.
Yeah.
The party lackey.
Yeah, he's conniving, and he's ultimately treacherous. Although it's funny, because the stoic Russian commander that's played by Sean Connery is the one who's actually literally committing treason, I think. Ramius goes to his cabin with Putin, and they use their twin keys. Each of them have a key that unlocks the safe in the captain's quarters, And also, they each have a nuclear key, so they can actually detonate or arm the nuclear missiles or launch them.
Correct.
So, in our first serious plot development, Ramius goes to meet with Putin. Putin's very, I guess, he's patronizing is what he is.
Yeah, that's a good term.
Yeah, he definitely patronizes Ramius. But Ramius doesn't matter, or Ramius doesn't care, because they read the orders and then have a little back and forth conversation. And then Ramius proceeds to murder Putin, because this is the beginning of his plot. So he then calls the doctor to say there's been a horrible accident. He burns the original orders. He substitutes fake orders that say that they're going to be going off the coast of by Maine in the North Atlantic to do some sort of war games. And then that's where he's going to defect. Although at this point, we don't actually know that. At this point, he could be taking the nuclear submarine to go sneak up on the Americans and launch his missiles.
This is also the scene where the movie takes it from Russian subtitles and just switches it into English.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, there's a very clever device where they're on the Russian submarine, everybody's speaking Russian, and there's a little speech that Putin delivers, and when he gets to the word Armageddon, which happens to be the same in English and in Russian, it changes completely. Like, there's, I forget what it's called, but it's like that it zooms in on his mouth, he says Armageddon, it zooms out, and everybody's speaking English.
Which is good, because then we can listen to Sean Connery's fake Russian accent as Scotch, as opposed to the Russian, his horrible Russian, which was horrible. So.
True. But do you know how long he had to prepare for this role?
How long he was given, or how long he needed to take?
Well, actually, he asked for more time.
Because your question had, I mean, the way you phrased that, that could have been two meanings. Are you asking me if I knew how long he had been given to do this, or are you asking me if I know how long it had taken him to be able to do this?
Well, rather than a question, I'll just tell you
splitting hairs.
Originally, Baldwin was approached for his role in 1988, but he wasn't told which role. Klaus Maria Brandauer was cast as a sub-commander of Ramius, but 2 weeks into filming, he had to quit due to a prior commitment. So they faxed the script to Sean Connery, who declined it because he said the script didn't make any sense. Turns out they didn't fax the first page to him. So he arrived in L.A. on Friday and was supposed to start filming on Monday, but he requested one extra day to rehearse. So there you go. He was hired on Friday. He started on Tuesday.
Okay, well, that explains a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to forgive him a little bit of his Russian accent.
All right.
But it's true. He is I think there's probably some sort of comedian in the past who, made the joke that he's Sean Connery. Of course, everyone's going to have a Scottish accent on the Russian boat if he's the commander.
Well, I kind of laughed at that because I kind of equated him to the Kevin Costner of the Humphrey, of the Russian language. So
at this point, the plot is afoot, or the game is afoot, or whatever. We know something's going on, and Sean Connery is off the rails, and you don't know who. That's the Russian end of things. They're headed toward the North Atlantic in a submarine that's basically can fly under the radar, swim under the sonar, I don't know. It's virtually undetectable with nuclear missiles and headed toward America. Enter CIA analyst Jack Ryan, played by Alec Baldwin, a very young Alec Baldwin.
Jack Ryan comes to Washington from the UK to tell the CIA boss, who is James Earl Jones, we got these pictures, we're not sure what they are, but we're concerned by them, and we want one of your analysts here. I need to talk to some people here to figure out what we think it is. That's all reason that he ends up in Washington.
And then he goes and visits his friend at the Naval Shipyards, who looks at the pictures that MI6 took and says, oh, this is going to be a Caterpillar drive.
And then from there, then it's that whole, there's been a development because the Red October went to sea, and then all of the fleet, the Russian fleet, then immediately went scrambling after shortly after. So then there's a briefing at the White House, which Jack Ryan gets pulled into, and he's the only one who kind of has this different insight because he just so happens that he's done a bio book on the captain.
So he thinks he knows how the captain thinks, and he sees this immediately as a possible defection opportunity.
Correct. Absolutely.
And presumably he knows about the situation with his wife, so maybe that already tips him off. although that's not disgusting.
Well, that was the point where he said, you know, that it was the first anniversary of his wife's death. And, you know, and that I know this man, and, you know, do you know this man? And, you know, there's that whole scene where, you know, the political, you know, the political guy, the political attaché is like, you know, I'm a politician, so, you know, if I'm not lying, I'm stealing, or whatever he says, whatever great line he says.
Well, and that's Richard Jordan, and he does a really good job as the National Security Advisor. And then Josh Ackland plays the Soviet ambassador, and he does a great job, too.
Absolutely.
Because it's all Cold War diplomacy, where the Soviet ambassador comes to the NSA advisor and says that they've got a sub that has gone missing, so they've launched this rescue team to go find it.
Right.
And the NSA guy is like, well, we'd be happy to help you find it. And the Soviet guy's like, no, that won't be necessary. I think we're fine, but we just want to let you know what was going on.
Yeah, because we've just launched our whole fleet, and that might look like an act of war, and we just wanted you to know, no, just kidding.
Yeah, it's simply a rescue mission, and nothing to see here. Move along.
Exactly.
So you've got the Cold War diplomacy angle. You've got the Russian captain who has basically stolen a nuclear sub. And then you've got the CIA analyst, Jack Ryan, who, it turns out, he's actually was a Marine that was shot down. His helicopter was shot down. And he
correct.
Was injured.
He had a helicopter accident.
Yeah, so he has some military skill in actual combat as well as being an analyst.
Right.
So you've got the CIA analyst who's saying, I've got a hunch that this is what he's doing. And you've got the military guys who say, oh no, he's coming to start World War III. And you've got the chess-playing diplomats on the other level playing. So then, the USS Dallas, which is another sub, actually hears the Red October.
First, you know, there's the part where the Red October's launched, and the Dallas is already doing some, you know, just some seismic research. They come across this what they call, you know, it's a magma displacement, but it turns out it's not. It's actually this silent drive, what they figure out. So they start tracking the ship because they're like, we want to know what's going on with the ship that's being out here in the silent propulsion, which is happening simultaneously to Jack Ryan, you know, trying to get Washington to let him go to the ocean so that he can try and get on the ship to try and make contact with the Red October.
And this is where we meet Courtney B. Vance as the sonar technician, second class, Ronald Jonesy Jones.
Yeah. And one point that I have to make about this, because I made this point when I was watching it the other night with, I think Ben and Derek were both watching it with me. So they have this sound booth where they're doing all this sonar research, right? And they're really intently listening to everything, correct?
Okay.
So it's ostensibly like the sound area, correct? Did you agree with that?
Yes, yeah. They're actually listening for discrete sounds in their immediate environment.
Right. So you have this environment where it's meant to be, your whole intent is to try and get sound, right?
Yeah.
So you have headphones and it's a quiet space, but you have one of the loudest possible teletype machines right next to you. Does that not seem a little ridiculous?
Yeah.
I know that they put it there because of the plot, because it, you know, plays into the plot, and there is a telex, there's flash off the thing, but like, come on. I have a hard time believing you're going to have this multi-billion-dollar piece of machinery that you're going to put in the ocean, and you're going to have this sound room with these people that are intently listening for quiet things in the water with expensive sonar equipment and headphones, and you're going to put this giant damn printer right there.
I agree, although you have to remember, this is the government we're talking about.
Oh, no, I know. I'm just saying. It was one of those things where I'm like, and it's a movie, so, but I'm just saying, it was one of those things that took me a little bit out of the movie.
Yeah, that is
true. As did presidential candidate Fred Thompson, so.
Exactly, yeah. There are a lot of fun people here, but yeah, actually, as it turns out, Fred Thompson takes me out of every movie he's in. Although at this point, I think maybe, you know what would have been fun, is if they had made the Tim Curry role had been played by Herman Cain. I'm just saying. It could be fun. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Okay, so what we have here now is we've got Ramius's sub that's headed toward North America, and they're trying to, they're being picked up by the USS Dallas, but the Dallas is listening in on it. Once they think they know what they have, they start listening and pursuing, but in a way that they don't want the Russians to know that they are there. Also, you have the other Russian sub that's going, a Tupolev sub, that's hunting down the Red October. And even though Ramius killed Putin and swapped the orders around, he had also sent a letter to his cousin or something, which happens to be high up in the Kremlin, announcing that he was defecting. So that's why the Russians knew, because he told them directly. So the Russians are after the Red October, and the Americans are listening to Red October and also preparing for if Red October is going to be launching the first strike. And this is where the Russians track down Red October. Red October goes toward this like undersea canyon to evade detection.
Right.
Okay. So the Caterpillar drive fails. The submarine comes under attack by Soviet forces, and then it begins its maneuvers through the undersea canyon. The Dallas has discovered them, and they plot a course to intercept where they're going to come out of this canyon, because they're familiar with the tricks that the Russians use, because this is all a game between submarines, or submariners. So USS Dallas is kind of going on a hunch and headed toward the end of this canyon. In the meantime, the Red October has gone into the canyon in order to evade the Russian sub that's coming to sink it. And that's where you get the first of the CGI torpedo action.
Right.
So Tupolev is not able to track Red October, but guesses the Mentor's route, and he also sets up a new course to intercept. And let's see, that's where they do the... Okay, so the Dallas plots the intercept course, and Ryan arranges to be deposited on the Dallas.
Right.
And this is the scene where, when we've been established before that Jack Ryan doesn't have to fly,
correct.
So now he's going on a helicopter out there to be dangled onto a sub.
Yeah, which I can't imagine wanting to do under even the best of circumstances.
And in that scene, they actually used a real sub and a real helicopter, so that was all just practical. Oh, by the way, the commander of the Dallas is Bart Mancuso, who's Scott Glenn. And Scott Glenn is always fun.
Yeah, I thought he was played a pretty good captain.
Oh, yeah. He's a good actor. And he has that military bearing. I mean, I guess because I know him first from The Right Stuff. You know, he already seems to, and he has the hair.
And the giant 90s glasses.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got the lantern jaw.
Yeah.
Or maybe.
He's not somebody you would ever want to pick a fight with.
No, it seems like he could just squint at you and intimidate you a little bit.
Right.
So therefore, a good military commander.
Agreed.
Okay. At this point, the Soviet ambassador comes back to the NSA and says, okay, what we have is a renegade. We would like to take you up on the offer of sinking the boat for us. Here's where Ryan is really pressing that this guy's going to defect. Okay.
Well, that's where they have to bring in the whole deep sub rescue, because Ryan has to convince the captain that, you know, that Ramius wants to defect and that he really isn't some crazy Russian headed for the coast to try and blow up the world.
And then there's this, Morse code exchange between Ryan and Ramius?
Right. Well, between the captain, essentially, but, yeah, Ryan.
Well, I guess it's between Mancuso.
Right.
And so they respond in one ping only, kind of.
Right.
Yeah. Secret
code.
Because
it's the only way he can realistically respond back. But
true, because at this point, he has his core group of defectors. The rest of the 100 other, 200 other people in this crew are not defecting. They're just sailors.
Correct. The rest of the crew is still the crew. So there's no way he could respond because they would have been able to pick up on his Morse code.
Exactly. It becomes clear that the chief officer who's not in on the plot is Tim Curry.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Which, again, it may have been, if they had used, I don't know, I guess less of a funny-faced actor. Anyway. Then they decide, okay, this is the clever way he's going to deal with this is he's going to stage a radiation emergency.
Yes.
He's going to then have to deposit all of the crew on land or out in boats to be rescued. And then in a heroic act, he and the rest of the commanders will go down with the boat and then scuttle it so the Americans can't get it.
Yeah, that's the plot device to use to kind of try and get everybody off.
Not in a creepy way.
Yeah, so it seems he's a very patriotic guy. He's going down with the ship, and he's going to destroy the ship so that the Americans can't get it. So the crew is all on board with that. It's all very heroic. In the meantime, the Americans, through Ryan, have figured out that, okay, he does want to defect, so they're going to help him out, and they send a missile down, or a torpedo down to blow up the Red October, but they just detonate it prior to it impacting. And so it seems like to everybody on the surface that the Americans are sinking the boat or the sub. Okay, so they get everybody off the boat, everything off the sub. You've got just Ramius and his people down. Then we have Jack Ryan and the captain of the Dallas, and then the sonar guy. Again, it's a weird choice of people that are going down. It's kind of like the Star Trek away team.
Right.
Like, why would you have
a... you pick your A-list actor.
Yeah, I guess, and your senior commander. So your boat, your actual sub that you're responsible for, is now being piloted by the B-team, and the A-team is all going to go on this other sub.
Yeah.
But that's
probably never happens like that in any kind of realistic circumstance, as much as you can have a realistic circumstance with some kind of Cold War Russian submarine defection movie.
Exactly. Well, and then they have this super new sub that can couple with any foreign submarine, so that you've got that part of it. So they take this little sub, hooks up to the Red October. Everything's fine. There's a little bit of tension between the groups because, you know, they are cold warriors. And just as everybody's confident about how this plan's going to work just fine, then Tupolev and his sub show up, and now it's a battle between submarines.
Well, but then you also have the brief plot twist where, you know, the cook on board who's trying to, you know, launch the missile and the missile failure to blow up the ship because he's, one of the plants of the political bureau.
And that's happening, as far as I can tell, at the very same time, sort of just before the big sub battle.
Right.
You find out that it's the cook who is the saboteur, who was one that actually disabled the Caterpillar drive. He's now going to try to launch a missile. Ramius and Jack Ryan go after it's hard to, because Ramius is actually the guy who's committing treason. It's a little weird for me to get my nomenclature correct, but you basically have the CIA analyst with the handgun and the captain of the Soviet submarine with the handgun going after the cook, who was a saboteur, leaving the entire submarine being helmed by the commander of the American sub.
Yes, because of course they kill off Sam Neill.
Yeah, that's true. You find out that the cook is the saboteur because he goes up onto the bridge or whatever the equivalent is and ends up firing rounds off, and one of them kills Sam Neill, who's the second in command.
Who just wanted to go to Montana.
He did. There was a scene where Sean Connery wants to fish. Sam Neill wants to go to Montana and get big-breasted American women, or something like that. So Sam Neill dies, and Sean Connery and Jack Ryan go after
him. Wait, did you just make the death noise?
Oh, yeah, on purpose, yeah.
Sam Neill dies.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay. Well, it was kind of, it was violins followed by
Okay, well, you can insert that in post.
Okay. So the Russian commander and then the guy who writes a book go after the saboteur, and then through Hollywood magic, there's a shootout aboard a submarine, which is always fun. And Ryan ends up killing the saboteur, and the commander is wounded, and then they get back up on the bridge at the time where now Tupolev has found them, and now it's full on, I don't know what you call it. It would be a dogfight in the air. But
in the water. Oh, I see.
Yeah. It was in the air. It would be a dogfight. It's a fish fight. I don't know. Anyway, submarine on submarine action.
Not in the creepy way.
Which actually sounds like a different part of the video store, too.
It really does.
Yeah. So you've got clever maneuvering and tension because you've got torpedoes headed boat. Anyway, it's actually perfectly enjoyable. I think it's well paced. I think it's well paced.
That has the requisite amount of tension.
Yeah, but there's nothing, there's no reason to talk morally about that.
No.
What happens is the Soviet sub gets blown up. The people on the Soviet crew who's being rescued by the Americans see the outline of a sub being blown up underwater and think that, oh, the captain has scuttled the sub, so everybody's a hero, everybody's having a wonderful time. Flash forward to they're now taking the Red October up the MASH River. What is
some stupid river? It doesn't matter. It's not
Hawkeye? Where was Hawkeye from? Crabapple Cove, Penobscot Bay.
Oh, okay.
They go up Penobscot Bay or Penobscot River.
I was going to say that, but then I thought it had to be wrong.
Yeah,
but
it turns out it wasn't Hawkeye. It was Hot Lips Houlihan who was having an affair with Penobscot. Anyway, never mind. Okie dokie. So there ends the film. Everybody's happy, and Ryan and Ramius are going to go fishing someday.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is bizarre, but.
So again, I think it's perfectly enjoyable. Again, I can't imagine like standing up and cheering through the whole thing, but you know, it was well paced. It had the requisite amount of attention. The effects were actually pretty good for the time. Perfectly fine, and it made its money back. It was a nice big hit. And it launched Tom Clancy into Tom Clancy films instead of just Tom Clancy novels. So how do you think Alec Baldwin stacks up in the Jack Ryan universe?
I actually prefer Harrison Ford to Alec Baldwin. And I think part of that is because I think Alec Baldwin was just too young an actor, so it didn't kind of fit with the timeline of the other characters. So if you've seen the other movies, Patriot Game and then Clear and Present Danger, which are the other two Harrison Ford Clancy movies, you know, it seems he's more in the right element, kind of. Patriot Game was 92 and Clear and Present Danger was 94. And out of the two of those, I thought Patriot Game was much, much better. The Clear and Present Danger was okay, but I preferred the first to the second of the Harrison movies. That may have also been because the movie content was a little bit. I like the movie story. I think was better for Patriot Games. So
the only thing that links all three movies is James Earl Jones. He plays the CIA director in all three movies.
Does he?
Uh huh.
Is he in third? Okay, because he's somewhere. Spoilers, but in one of them he dies. So yeah. That must be the third movie.
I do believe that would be the third movie.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
because this is where he becomes sick with cancer. Yeah, so you're right. We got Hunt for Red October in 90, Patriot Games in 92, where we've changed up Harrison Ford. And then you've got Clear and Present Danger, where you continue with Harrison Ford. And then James Earl Jones is the only one who's been in all three. But then you get to 2002, where I guess that was sort of a reboot?
I think so, because I'm pretty sure that The Sum of All Fears was the beginning story, but I get the impression that that was either they were trying to reboot the series by making it the origin story, or it was actually the origin story truly, but because it doesn't really fit in the canon of all of the movies.
Yeah, it's very clear that it uses a different chronology.
It's a different pace movie. It's got some different kind of. It has to be before, because it's before he met his wife and before they had the daughter. So it has to be the prequel, if you will.
Except that it's set in 2002, so it's not a Cold War thing. It's a completely different.
Right, but I think it was their attempt to reboot the whole franchise.
And evidently it did not work, because this was Ben Affleck as Jack Ryan.
Right.
And the CIA director is played by?
Morgan Freeman.
Which, if you're going to replace James Earl Jones, Morgan Freeman is a good choice, isn't it?
Yeah, but I want to say that he dies in the movie, too. I haven't seen it in a while, but I'm pretty sure he dies, too. So.
Well, he's only God in that one movie, so he's been known to die.
And The Sum of All Fears is a perfectly fine movie, too. Out of the four movies, Patriot Games is probably the best, in my opinion. The Sum of All Fears is probably my second favorite, The Hunt for Red October being the third, and Clear and Present Danger probably being my least favorite of all of the four of them. Even though it has Willem Dafoe in it, but I just didn't like Clear and Present Danger all that much.
Now, speaking of four movies, you know there's a fifth, right?
No, is there?
Yeah. It actually came out in January of 2014.
Which was what?
Jack Ryan, played by Chris Pine, who is Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Also, like, the bad guy is Kenneth Branagh. Then I guess one of Ryan's American cohorts is Kevin Costner.
What movie was that?
Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit.
I don't even remember that as a movie.
Me either. I saw it on the list. I'm like, what? Is this even out yet? Is it pre-production or post-production or whatever? No, it was released.
Really? I didn't know it was a Clancy novel, first of all.
Yeah. Well, I guess the Jack Ryan : Shadow Recruit.
Yeah.
Should have tipped us off.
You would have thought the Jack Ryan : would have made it pretty obvious that it was a Clancy Jack Ryan flick, but no, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, so here we go. It was released January 17, 2014. Its budget was $60 million. Worldwide, it made $134. It made its money back, so, you know.
I'll have to watch it. I did not know that, so I'll have to add it to the list of things to watch.
Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 57%. Metacritic.
I never go by anything. I don't ever trust what people say about movies. I never use any of the websites or any of that crap, because invariably my taste is so fickle that it never matches anybody else's. So,
well, that's true, and you're kind of judgy, so you know.
I'm very judgy. Not kind of judgy. That's very generous of you. I'm very incredibly judgmental. Yeah. I make no apologies.
Oh, well, I'm judgy too. I think I'm less.
You're judgy in the mustache department.
Oh yeah, of course. Are you kidding? I could never grow a mustache like Kurt Russell's fake mustache. As it turns out, nor would I want to, but that's a whole different deal there.
Well, your lovely aunt was making posts today, so.
From Tombstone.
Yes.
Yep. She went to Big Nose Kate's bar.
Yeah, no, I give her mad props for all of that, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny, because, you know, not thinking about Tombstone again. You've seen Clerks, right?
Yes, I've seen Clerks.
Okay. Yeah, I know, it's an odd.
I own Clerks. I love Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I love Clerks, too. Clerks is a brilliant movie. Someday we'll probably talk about Clerks. But you know how Dante is always like, you know, I'm not even supposed to be here, sort of whining through the whole thing? Like,
right.
You know, he's the put-upon guy who's like, I'm just trying to get through today. Well, that's what Kurt Russell is in this thing. It's like, I just want to make money in Tombstone. I don't want to be a lawman, although it's funny because in the podcast, I don't think I varied at all. I think every single time I talk about lawman, I refer to him as lawman. Yeah, he's a lawman from way back. We need someone to, superhero, somebody call Spider-Man.
Well, you know, you've had a historically bad enunciation, so.
Apparently, yeah, well.
But we don't hold that against you.
Well, I'm glad, because otherwise, yeah. Anyway.
We just tease you mercilessly when you're not around.
That's okay. You can tease me to my face.
That's true, too.
Yep. Tell your friends. Okay. Send feedback. Things I mispronounced.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. Nuclear. Nuclear. Nuclear.
Yeah. I would think your nuclear engineering brother would have... We should ask him what he thinks of the mispronunciation.
Oh, I'm sure he doesn't like it. I can only imagine. He doesn't like the fact that I will use the Heisenberg uncertainty principle to talk about anything but the movement of some atomic particles. He's like, first of all, no, it's not like the fact that you can never know what you look like because when you look in a mirror, you change your expression. He says, that's not it at all. What it is an actual mathematic formula that you can account for.
God bless him.
Yeah, I still think you can use it as an analogy to talk about that you can't know what you look like because when you look in a mirror, you change your face. Okay, so the only other thing I can think about this movie is that you're more experienced, or since you're a James Bond fan, you're more experienced with a character that keeps getting actors replaced.
Right.
Does it work here?
I think for the most part, I think that Harrison Ford was a good interchange. And as I think you and I had a text exchange earlier today, you know, I think the Ben Affleck character was not a bad interchange as well. You know, having seen all the films, all the four films that I'd seen, like I said, you know, I think Alec Baldwin was probably the least of the three actors that I've seen in the role. But again, that may be attributable to both his youth and the fact that this was the first movie.
To be fair, he is not the main character in either the book or the movie Red October. It was not a Jack Ryan series until after the book became popular. I mean, he was a main character, obviously, but he wasn't. I mean, in the movie, it was obviously a Sean Connery
movie. The movie opened with him and closed with him.
True, but it was a Sean Connery movie. Sean Connery did all the heavy, you know, scenery chewing.
Maybe. I mean, it could go either way, I guess.
Do you have any opinions? Are you interested? Do you care at all about the Batman franchise? Batman?
I haven't seen very many of the Batman movies. Because while I'm a Batman fan, the movies just never really resonated with me. I don't have really strong feelings. I'm not offended that Ben Affleck's going to be the next Batman. It doesn't worry me or bother me or give me any angst. So I don't have any kind of, I don't have any seething nerd fanboy rage that Affleck's going to be Batman. Because my retort to that is Michael Keaton.
Well, exactly.
You know, so sometimes an actor makes a part and sometimes a part makes an actor. And so, you know, you have to give Affleck the chance.
Yeah, and if you really liked a particular James Bond or a particular Batman, they didn't erase all the other movies.
Right. It didn't undo everything. And, you know, unless they do something like make Matt Damon be, you know, Robin, then, you know, we'll be fine.
Well, that would be a whole different movie, and hopefully Kevin Smith would direct that movie.
Well, then that would just be, you stole my joke. That's exactly where I was heading. But
Except they would never do that because Kevin Smith directed Daredevil. And that didn't work out so well.
was that Ben Affleck?
It was.
And Jennifer Garner?
Yes.
I've seen that. Okay.
Yeah, it's actually, if you know, I guess I don't want to return to it because I have plenty else on my list at this point. But I don't remember it being quite as bad as everybody seemed to think.
I don't think it was a horrible movie, but I think what everybody got up in arms about that is that it wasn't true to the. The movie was too far afield of the story, and that's why people got upset, I believe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's very
possible. Sometimes people just want to bitch to bitch, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, it's like I said, I'm sure there are plenty of people that hate Ben Affleck because he's Ben Affleck for no other reason.
Well, and you're never going to appease 100% of the nerd audience or the geek audience or the comic book. I mean, the fanboy audiences are notoriously fickle, and if you don't give them 100% of exactly what they envision is going to be the perfect cast, They're gonna pick everything apart about it anyway. They won't want to like it. They'll want to make every excuse to not like it, which, you know, that's their right.
Well, the internet makes people more judgy, I think.
Well, because there's safety in anonymity.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe more vocally judgy.
It's easy to be a punk and talk shit when you're, you know, behind a keyboard. It's harder to talk shit when you're in a crowd full of people that can shut you down.
Exactly. So if you have a punk ass comment for us, send it to show@notinacreepyway.com.
Yeah. That's very or smooth.
Actually, send it to punkass@notinacreepyway.com. That would be fine, too.
Yeah, or sitandspin@notinacreepyway.com.
Exactly. Yeah, either way, we'll get them. Actually, I kind of have a call for action for people, not for you, but for people listening to this. If you listen this far...
You need to, like, insert, you know, trumpets and the parquet margarine guy and all that right here.
The parquet margarine guy. Yeah, I'll insert all that guy. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature. You're soaking in it. Anyway, I have a call to action, and that is, if you're listening this far, we of course want feedback, but I want specific feedback. I want to know where you are listening from and in under what circumstances. Like, are you on a boat? Are you with a goat? I'm not going to judge, you know, on the recording. I'll judge privately, I guess. But I just want to get a feel for who's listening. So, show@notinacreepyway.com or just on Facebook. Just pop a little message in there. That would be very helpful. Because I know
you basically just want to fill up the audience.
Yeah. But not in a creepy way. What do you think about the podcast, actually? So I can pick your... I assume we're done talking about Hunt for October.
No, I'm enjoying listening to it. So, you know.
Where do you want it to go?
Participating in it. Well, I'm not steering this ship, Captain.
Well, no, I know, but I'm just, do you have any thoughts, any...
That's what you kind of have to figure that out, but, I mean, if you want it to be, you know, movie review, movie, you know, do you want it to be a movie suggestion, do you want, I mean, I don't know. Do you want it to be more about movies and pop culture, or is, you know, what is your you know, what is your focus?
Well, I guess my
and where do you want to put your energy into? Because really, whatever you decide, you know, it's fine. I'm flexible, and yeah. And I think things are fine. But then, you know, you also have the commitment of you have to watch the movie, which again, I'm also fine with that too.
Oh, you mean I have to watch the movie? And you
well,
have, I mean,
does.
Yeah, one of the three of us, actually two of the three of us, it turns out, and perhaps three of the three
correct.
Of us soon, will have to have watched the movie. Well, there's that. I guess what I envision, even with the first episode, the Like Your Grandmother actually was a pretty good, the episode itself was kind of a launching point for other stories. And then you get where, you know, like Drew was very passionate about Collateral, and you know, you really were passionate about 2001, and so those episodes are just great. I mean, it's great listening through all of those just on their own. But I also...
I think maybe that may be what we have to do, is we have to pick movies that we are very polarly excited about.
Yeah, or...
Polarly?
Well,
is that a word?
Yeah, well, we have to be passionate about it.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that works.
So, I mean, maybe...
Because I think the problem is that we're picking this one, is it's kind of a meh. It was good, but meh, you know, it was good,
yeah.
Meh. But I think that's the problem is, you know, one of us has to really love it, and the other one has to be like, okay, well, convince me. Or
yeah.
One of us has to absolutely just hate it. Because, like, you know, but, like, Big Trouble, where you loved it, and I was like, okay.
Well, and that's, I mean, even that was okay as far as, because I did really love it, and so I was happy to talk about it. I guess my original vision was we would talk about a movie, and that movie might very well be a launching pad into... Like, Hunt for October could turn into kind of a reflection on growing up during the Cold War, although we talked about that during 2001.
Right.
But do you have thoughts about the next one? How about Stargate?
Yeah, we can do that.
Do you have the original Stargate?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in forever.
Yeah, let's do Stargate.
Okay.
Because it's fun, it's Kurt Russell, and it's just goofy enough that...
I'm sensing a theme. You and Drew, this... Hard on for Kurt Russell.
I didn't realize how big of a hard on I had in that creepy way. Anyway, yeah, I didn't realize the size of my hard on for Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell's just a fun actor.
I don't disagree with you,
yeah.
But and by the way, I'm with Jennifer, and I can't believe she loves Overboard.
You don't believe she loves Overboard, or are you an Overboard fan?
I can't believe that she does. So I'm glad I'm firmly in her camp.
Oh yeah, there's nothing wrong with Overboard.
Yeah.
It's,
well,
you know, it's
you
not
know.
In the same genre as Tombstone, but that doesn't matter.
No, but from the deep exhalation, I gotta suspect that Brother Drew is not so enamored with it.
Well, you never know. Well, no, actually, that's not true. You actually pretty much do know. Yeah, yes. Oh, I'd love to talk about Stargate. Actually, on a different tangent, I noticed that Cousin Jane in Juno, who's a big sci-fi fan, she...
Uh-huh.
She had posted something about studying for finals, so I sent her a quick Facebook message saying, hey, have you seen 2001? And she's like, no. I said, okay, well, I don't know if I can recommend it. I recommend the book, and after you read the book, then you probably have to watch the movie, just because, it's, you know, it's a classic movie. Then I got to the point where you were talking about being a fan of Dune, so I said, hey, you know, Jason tells me that sci-fi fans can be broken into two groups, groups that like Dune and groups that don't. And she's like, I'm a horrible sci-fi fan. I've never read Dune either. I'm like, no judgment. I'm just, you know, just curious. I said, you know, your favorite movie can be Sharknado. I don't care. And she goes, Sharknado is a perfectly enjoyable movie, but I was thinking about the original Stargate. I'm like, I love Stargate, but we're not going to do Sharknado. Because Sharknado, I mean, although I guess we could, because have you seen it?
I am not going to do Sharknado. You can watch Sharknado all you want in the privacy of your home.
You know what?
But I have seen
Sharknado. Yeah, in the privacy of my home. No, because it was on. It was on sci-fi. I did not seek this out. Other people had talked about how bad it was. I'm like, well, how bad could it be? Oh, my God.
What possessed you?
No, because, you know, I don't mind watching bad movies. This was so bad.
What's the next one? Cat Avalanche?
Well, the thing is, if it was just, you know, sci-fi lousy special effects,
or like Emulation, you know, with emus and magma or something.
Oh no, that's not true, is it?
No, I'm making them up.
Oh,
no,
God.
It's not true.
Oh, my jeez. Emulation. Spontaneously combusting.
Come on, that's brilliant, though.
Spontaneously combusting emus.
That's what I'm saying. Emus that turn into lava. I've got to go. I got to go trademark this shit.
Yeah.
Emulation.
Emulation. I think it has to be spontaneous combustion, not.
All right. Well, that's lava. Fine. That's fine. You know,
but
that
the title is
out,
brilliant.
But yeah. Anyway. So I'm sorry. What was the original tangent? I don't even remember.
No. Just the fact that Stargate had already come up.
So, yeah. Well, and again, I think her. And I don't mean to patronize anyone, but her generation may not be the Dune generation. You know, I'm speaking from my perspective, and so I think that when I say those people can be booking the classes, I'm speaking of my generation.
Well, absolutely.
You know, because then there's the whole different sci-fi now with the, you know, the Orson Scott card and you know, that being really popular, and then there's the, you know, then the god awful, but they can just keep bringing back Tolkien books. Why can't they just leave him be?
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, I liked playing Dungeons & Dragons. I like playing video games in that kind of, you know, fantasy, you know, swords and sorcery kind of world. But
yeah.
I don't like the Lord of the Rings movies at all. I've never been into the Lord of the Rings books. I realize
I don't know if we've discussed this. I haven't seen any of the Lord of the Rings movies. And you know why I haven't seen them? Because I read the damn book. And
oh, okay.
So I was forced to read all of the books in high school. And when I say all of them, I mean all of them. Because my teacher in my freshman year had this strange fetish for Tolkien, I think because she smoked a lot of pot. So for some reason, I think she was just this strange hippie Tolkien lover, and so we got tortured by him. So I haven't seen the movies because I don't have a desire. And, you know, I kind of have this disproportionate need to see a movie based on how many people tell me I have to see it. So,
oh, I agree with you there.
I'm like, no, just like I've never seen a Harry Potter movie, and I don't have any need to. I had a point, and that point just evaporated.
What's a good twisty thriller?
A good twisty thriller.
Yeah. What's a good thriller?
Well, what? In what way?
In a way that,
I mean,
that you feel
passionate. Give me an example of a movie, and I can try and... Malice, I think, was a good... You haven't seen Malice.
I don't think I've seen Malice.
See, Malice, which to me was a good twisty movie, which is Alec Baldwin, with one of the greatest speeches of all time Alec Baldwin ever gives in a movie.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll have to, maybe not for next week, but I'll look into it. Is it relatively new,
yeah,
or is it old?
Oh, it's old.
Oh, wait, is it the one with Kim Basinger?
Yeah, no. Well, Nicole Kidman, Alec Baldwin, Bill Pullman, and Bebe Newworth.
Okay. All right. I have not seen it, but interesting. Okay, Malice should be on the list someplace. You know,
yeah,
it's
a great twisty thriller because I think it's got Anne Bancroft in it too.
Well,
it's a great kind of twisty turny movie where it's almost Hitchcock esque. Not quite to that level because Hitchcock's of course the master, but it's got some good twists and turns and it's got a good couple like oh, I didn't see that coming kind of thing.
You know what we could do? One of my favorite movies is Psycho.
Yes, and.
Okay, so you're not... All right.
Psycho's a great film. I love Hitchcock, but I don't want to watch it again.
Okay. I'm sure if I go look through my list, or my... if I go look through my drawers, but not in a creepy way, I'm sure I can find something that we'll both go, oh, yeah. Because you know what? I don't care about anybody or how anybody else feels about it. I liked watching the movie Rat Race. I liked talking about the movie Rat Race.
Me too.
Yeah, that was fun. So, and I actually watched half of, it's a 3-hour movie, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Okay.
Don't go out and buy it. Let me just point that out. It's got some funny little bits, and you will recognize everyone. It's got everybody from Mr. Roper to Spencer Tracy.
Wow.
To Milton Berle as a younger man. And Jonathan Winters and Phil Silvers. And I mean, you know, it's fine. But it's not, I mean, Rat Race really was, it's a mad, 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 mad world of its day.
Not that I can think of. Yeah, it was Anne Bancroft, by the way. George C. Scott. Wow.
Oh.
God, when was it? 93.
90, Malice, Alec Baldwin, 93.
You got 53% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is Alec Baldwin your Kurt Russell?
What do you mean?
Are you a big Alec Baldwin fan?
No. I mean, it's hard to find. I like Alec Baldwin in certain roles. I like some of the stuff he's done. I won't go out of my way.
Just because his name's on it, you won't go see it just because of that.
Correct.
Okay. All
right. I mean, I loved him on 30 Rock.
He's been super funny on Saturday Night Live all throughout the years.
Yeah. I watched his up late TV show, whatever, Hoo Ha. Wasn't really that impressed by it because I think really he liked to hear himself talk.
Yeah. And it turns out I don't want to hear actors talk about real issues. I want to see them act.
Well, and my problem with him is it was actors talking about, tell me the story that I heard about this story. And ha ha ha, I knew the story. It was kind of like him telling, like, I already knew the story, so I'm so super me kind of person.
I think that Lawrence O'Donnell hits me like that. Like, I think Rachel Maddow strikes the great tone.
I love Rachel Maddow. I like Lawrence O'Donnell, though. I give him some leeway, though, because he wrote, you know, for The West Wing.
Well, he knows everybody. He's done everything. So there's a certain amount of that, you know, if you have done everything, if you do know everybody, you just get to be a raconteur. But if it's all about, you know, that reminds me of the time I was in blah, blah, blah. If that's all you hear from him, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah. So, no, I'll watch stuff that he's in. I won't avoid movies because of him. But if he's in it, it's not going to sway me to see a movie that I wouldn't normally see. He's not going to have star power enough to influence me.
Yeah. Okay. Well. I was trying to put lightning in a bottle, and I didn't come up with it. So,
sorry to ruin your life.
No, it didn't ruin my life or the show or the show of my life. I got to spend all week thinking of a really good movie and then pronouncing things correctly.
Well, we all have our goals.
Yeah, there you go. 12 Dwarves. I forget what was that. Do you remember that quote from, oh God, I can't think of it, Jerk Me a Soda? Warren Beatty, Annette Bening, Bugsy.
Oh God.
No, okay, never mind. There's one part where Bugsy's in the car and he's trying to do, like, elocution lessons so he doesn't sound like such a Goomba.
No.
And so it's like 12 Dwarves or something, and I can't remember the whole thing. And couldn't say it, probably, if I could remember it. I guess tentative Stargate, but probably I'll find something else.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
All right. Well, thanks again.
All right.
And any final words? We already gave the call to action, so we can end it on that note. Or
the call to action's good.
Okay. I'm still looking for the perfect ending, but I'll just cobble things together until it'll come naturally at some point.
You're getting there, yeah.
Yeah.
But not in a creepy way.
Not in a creepy way, yeah. I got you right. Both you and Drew both said, dude, you have to incorporate... No, neither of you called me dude. But you both said, you need to incorporate the name of the show in somewhere in the episode.
Well, yes. Of course.
Yeah.
Hello.
No, I know. It seems simple. Since nobody gives feedback at all. No feedback. Actually, that's not quite true.
Yeah.
Actually, I was very pleased by the fact that Chris... was like, okay, now I'm going to have to listen to this thing. Like, okay, that's all I wanted. Just, once we can get you in the tent, if you don't like it and don't come back, that's fine. That's perfectly your right. I just want to lure you into the tent.
But not in a creepy way.
No, because, you know, as it turns out, singing and swaying and dancing with snakes is fun.
That's totally creepy.
Of course. So.
Wow. Okay.
Gotta get him in the tent, man. Okay.
Emulation.
Emulation. Oh, we gotta come up with a poster.
Cat Valance and Emulation. Cat Valance with no relation to Bruce Valance, so.
Okay, what's Cat Valance?
Yeah, cats and avalanches.
Oh, Cat Valance. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking, are we talking about Vince LeChivre again?
Oh, God, no, not the LeChivre joke. God, stop milking that.
Oh, I know, it's horrible. It makes me laugh every time.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. If you have a rant or rave, please send your email to rants@notincreepyway.com.
Like us on Facebook Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a comment. Turns out you can leave a 5-star rating and the comment could say your show sucks. And it still makes us happy.
Not in a creepy way.